Anyway, who would like to go on this story? So he said, please do not buy tickets until we hear from the Rebbe. I said, oh, you'll hear from the Rebbe. We're not worried. They went ahead and bought tickets. A lot of tickets. It's 3 weeks till the trip. No answer from the Rebbe. It's 2 weeks till the trip. No answer from the Rebbe. It's a week before the trip. We're supposed to go on a Tuesday evening. The Tuesday before, no answer from the Rebbe. Now this is very unusual, because we had written in 3 weeks before, and it was very unusual that the Rebbe, if he would answer us, waited so long. It just didn't usually happen like that. And we thought to ourselves, the Rebbe is not answering. You know what it means? We're not going. And the people 3,000 miles away said, what? You're not coming? And we already got you the tickets. And we said, well, we told you not to get the tickets. If the Rebbe is not answering, we're not coming. Okay. Are you listening closely? And again, I had just learned the inyan that I told you in the beginning. That whatever a tzaddik says, that's what's going to be. This is very important in the whole story. All of a sudden, it was now Wednesday before the Tuesday we're supposed to leave. It was Wednesday afternoon. And I get a phone call from Rabbi Klein, one of the Rebbe's secretaries. And he says that the Rebbe gave an answer as Kira Latzion on the trip, which means that you have a bracha for your trip. Ah, oh, Baruch Hashem. The Rebbe answered us, we have a bracha for our trip. Oh, Baruch Hashem. We're going on Tuesday on the trip. We called up the family 3,000 miles away. Baruch Hashem, we got an answer. Oh, they're so happy. And of course, I had the feeling, this is very interesting. Why had the Rebbe waited until so late? Okay, you can't necessarily get answers, but you could have the question. At least you could have the question, why would the Rebbe wait so late? And I thought to myself, it's very interesting. I don't know what it means, and maybe I'll never find out, but maybe I will. Are you listening now? This was Wednesday afternoon. Wednesday evening, I am now taking care of one of the baby boys. And when you take care of a baby boy, sometimes you change the baby boy. And I changed the pamper of the little baby boy. And now all of a sudden, I notice when I change the pamper, a big bump. A big bump. And I think to myself, what is that big bump on the front of the baby near the place where the bris milah is? What is that big bump? Well, as far as I knew, this is something called a hernia. Did you ever hear of a hernia? Basically, what happens is that you have in your stomach area kishkis, intestines. And sometimes they stick out because you strain yourself, or sometimes by a baby. Exactly how it happens, I'm not sure. But there's some kind of a change that the kishkis all of a sudden stick out, and it's like a big bump. And usually there has to be an operation to put it back into place, or else it could get dangerous, or there could be some difficulties. Well, we had to go to the doctor. At that time, we used the doctor in Flatbush, and we did not have a car, so we had to take a taxi. And it was night, and we went to Flatbush to the doctor. And the doctor looks at it, at the baby, and he says, this baby has quite a big hernia. It just all of a sudden came. And he has to have an operation. But we said to the doctor, but wait a minute. This coming Tuesday, we're going on a trip 3,000 miles away. And the doctor laughs. He says, you're not going on any trip on Tuesday. The baby has to have an operation, and he can't fly in a plane with this kind of a hernia. So you're going to have to put off your trip. And I told the doctor, well, just today we got a bracha from the Rebbe to go on the trip. Which means we're going to go. As I just told you before, I learned that once a tzaddik says something, that's the way it's going to be. And the doctor says, but you cannot go on the trip. You cannot put the baby in danger because you cannot fly with that kind of a hernia. You have to have an operation. Now, in those days, it's a little bit different than in these days. In these days, most of the time, a hernia operation is in one day in the hospital. The baby or the person will go in the morning and come out even in the afternoon. But in those days, all of the hernia operations, except for one doctor, all of the other doctors in New York, the person would be in the hospital for a few days. And there was only one very special big surgeon. They said, this surgeon had golden hands. He's so good. He was the only one who did it in a same-day operation. So he said, well, we could get the operation if it takes one day. And the doctor laughs. He says, you'll never get this doctor because he's so busy and people are lined up. You know, they already have the appointments and they already have the operation set up. He says, you might have to wait 2 months for this doctor, even to get him to see you. The doctor is busy. A good doctor is busy. And even another doctor, you might have to wait a week to get an appointment. And then to go to the hospital and be a few days in the hospital. You can't go on your trip on Tuesday. It's less than a week away. Forget about it. And it's knocking in my head. Just today we got a bracha from the Rebbe to go. And I learned that once a tzaddik says something, that's the way it's going to be. You understand? So he said, what is the name of this doctor? He gave us the name of the doctor. He said, you're wasting your time to call him. He's booked solid. This doctor is a doctor, they say he's got golden hands. He is booked solid. So he said, I had in my mind, I'm going to call his office in the morning and see what happens. Because he's the only doctor that could do it in one day. Thursday morning, call the office of this Dr. Cohen. It's in Bay Ridge, the other side of Brooklyn, by the ocean. And I said, well, we have a baby, he's got a hernia, we have to go on a trip on Tuesday, and if at all possible, we need an operation because we have to go on a trip on Tuesday. And the secretary is laughing. She says, are you kidding? Dr. Cohen is booked for 2 months in appointments. And even if he would see you and schedule an operation, you would not be able to get him to operate for 2 months. He's just booked solid in the surgeries also. He's very busy. It's impossible. Now, I knew to go to any other doctor was going to be a waste of time. I said, look, I understand Dr. Cohen's busy. Is it at all possible just to come to the office that he should look at the baby, even for a minute, just that we should have a second opinion, and maybe he thinks, to see what he thinks? And the secretary says, why are you wasting your time? I said, look, I'm not asking for anything except for the doctor to look at the baby for 1 minute. Even if he cannot do anything to operate, I would like to hear what he has to say. The secretary went to the doctor and she explained. And she came back to the phone. She said, look, the doctor also laughed. He says, you're going to waste your time. But if you want to come in around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he'll just look at the baby, but he can't do anything at all. I said, fine. Okay. Thursday, we didn't have a car even at that time. So we took a taxi from Crown Heights all the way to a place called Bay Ridge. It's on the other side of Borough Park. It's far, far away. And we go to the doctor. Finally, we go in the office. And then it's about 3 o'clock. The secretary says, okay, the doctor will see you for 1 minute. That's all. We took the little baby to the doctor. The doctor looks at the bump. He's a very nice doctor, but very busy. Shh. And he says, this must have an operation. You cannot go on your trip. You have to put off your trip. There's no way you can fly in a plane. And you have to find a doctor that can operate. I'm busy for the next 2 months. I'm sorry, that's it. And we dressed the baby. We're getting ready to leave. And we felt, look, we're doing whatever we can, right? We're supposed to do whatever we can. Now listen what happened. As we're going out of the room, we didn't leave the room yet, we're going out of the room, all of a sudden the secretary comes in with a funny smile on her face. She says, "Doctor, I just got a phone call. Tomorrow you're supposed to operate on a certain boy. This boy all of a sudden got the flu." Now, does a doctor make an operation if a child got a flu? The child is sick. They can't make the operation on the child. So all of a sudden she says, "Doctor, there's a space tomorrow, and if you want, these people have the baby that has the bump, so they could have their baby have the operation tomorrow, because now all of a sudden there's an opening." You understand? How many boys understand what just happened? The next day, the doctor had an operation he was supposed to do. Now the child can't come. And all of a sudden, now there's an opening. So the doctor smiled and he says, "Can you bring your baby tomorrow to the hospital early in the morning for the operation?" We said, "Yes." Now, all of a sudden, the doctor said, "Uh-oh, wait a minute. Before you go to the hospital, you have to do special things. It's called lab work. And the lab closes at 4 o'clock. They have to look over the baby and do certain things. And the lab is in Borough Park." So we ran to the phone, and we make a phone call. "We need a taxi. We have to go to this place in Borough Park. Now, listen, there's a man in the room, you know, where they wait, where the chairs are. The man says, excuse me, you're making a call to a cab. Where do you have to go?" We said, "We have to go to Borough Park to this place." He says, "I live 2 blocks away and I'm on my way home. Do you want a ride?" We said, "You don't mind taking us?" He said, "I'm going there anyway." We got in his car. We got to the lab around 3:30, 3:40, whatever it was. The lab was still open. They did all the things with the baby. It took them about 20 minutes. We went home Thursday night. Erev Shabbos in the morning, very early, we were in the hospital. It's a long Erev Shabbos, the summer. By Shabbos, the baby was home after the operation. And Tuesday, we were on the plane, just like the Rebbe said. Exactly like it happened. Now, Kinalach, once the Rebbe says something, once a tzaddik says something, later on things change, doesn't matter. The Rebbe already said it. Now, what is important for us, of course, the Rebbe said, Kinalach, Mashiach is coming, the Geul is coming, At Kumt Mashiach, all the good things. The Rebbe said it. Later on, as we know, the Rebbe, Kinalach, passed away. The Rebbe went to the Shemayim. We go to 770, and we don't see the Rebbe, and we feel, what happened? All of a sudden, everything changed. Kinalach, does it matter that everything changed, or whatever the Rebbe said is going to exactly happen? The answer is, of course, whatever the Rebbe said, everything is going to happen. We just have to wait. We can't figure it out. If we're patient and we do what the Rebbe wants from us, all the good things will happen. Kinalach, there was a great tzaddik, Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And he came for Shabbos to a certain shul because he was invited to come to this shul that he should be the special guest and he should speak and give over a special Dvar Torah. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger was staying by one of the homes of the people of that shul. And Shabbos morning he came to the shul to daven with everybody. And it was the first time he came to this shul. He took a look around. It was a nice shul, you know, a nice shul. But he started wondering about a few things in the shul. It came time for Kriyas HaTorah.
They take the Torah out from the Aron HaKodesh. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger noticed something that bothered him. The people went over to the Torah, they touched it with their hands, but nobody gave a kiss to the Sefer Torah. Nobody gave a kush to the Sefer Torah. They just touched it with their hands. Now, in the shul of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, he was used to people going and giving a kush to the Sefer Torah. What does it show when you give a kush to the Sefer Torah? Why do we do that? Do you know what that shows? How do we feel towards the Sefer Torah?
It's so that you love it.
You love it. And of course, you love Hashem who gave the Torah, right? Well, this is the way Rabbi Akiva Eiger would have hoped to see in this shul. Kind of bothered him that nobody got too excited about the Sefer Torah. Nobody really gave a kush to the Sefer Torah. Well, then started now the Aliyahs. Yamait! And they call up the Kohen. Now, in some shuls, when they call a person up to the Torah, they ask him also to give a donation, to give some tzedakah for the shul. And sometimes they even announce how much. Now, sometimes they have the minhag, they have the custom to announce how much the donation will be. And they call up the kohen, and he had his aliyah. And after he said the bracha at the end, so they asked him to announce how much money he will give to the shul. And he says, $1,000. Ooh, that's a lot of money. $1,000. This must be a wealthy man. Well, then they called the Levi up. And he had his aliyah, Yamoi, the Levi. And after the bracha at the end, they asked him to announce how much money he will give. And he says, $2,000. Oh my. And the Yisrael, $3,000. And the other Aliyahs, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000. Shh. Now, so much money. Now, Rabbi Akiva Eiger looked around at the shul, and he thinks to himself, from one Shabbos morning, so much money to be donated to the shul, and this is only one time I'm here on Shabbos, and these are the regular people davening here in this shul, and of course, there is a laning every Shabbos. If these people give so much money, because it wasn't some kind of a special Shabbos, just, you know, that they dafke are giving money that Shabbos, he would expect to see the shul covered with gold or fixed up with all kinds of beautiful stuff. But it was a plain shul. And in fact, certain parts of the shul were a little bit not so perfect, like paint that was sort of coming off the walls or certain seats that were kind of falling apart or tables that needed fixing. Or, you know, the floor could have used a fixing also. I mean, all of this money. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger went to the Gabbai, and he said, I'm not used to so much money being that the people say they're going to give so much money for Aliyahs. And if they give so much money, what is it used for? And the Gabbai laughed. He says, well, they really don't give that much money. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, you mean, they say they're going to give so much money, but they don't really give it? No, I'm lucky to get any money from the Aliyahs. They don't give it. They just say they're going to give it. Oh, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, They say they'll give a lot of money, but they, in the end, don't even give money. And then it came time, after the laning and after the davening, that Rabbi Akiva Eiger is going to give his Dvar Torah. And everybody sat down in their place. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger got up and he said, my Dvar Torah is going to be very short, but I hope everybody listens to it and takes it to heart and really learns from it. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says this. instead of kissing with your hands and giving tzedakah with your mouth, it's much better to kiss with your mouth and give tzedakah with your hands. And he sat down, and that was his Dvar Torah. The people were scratching their heads. They didn't exactly understand what he said. And he got up again, and he says, let me explain. In this shul, when they took out the Sefer Torah, people went to kiss the Sefer Torah only with their hand. Nobody really gave a kush. They just touched it with their hand. It would have been much, much nicer to give a kush with their mouth. Don't kush with your hand. You give a kiss with your mouth. Then, when it came time for how much tzedakah people would give for the shul, they said $1,000, $2,000, $5,000. Out of their mouth came a lot of tzedakah. They said they're going to give a lot of money. But in the end, did they ever bring the money to the shul? Of course, after Shabbos. On Shabbos, you can't bring money to shul. After Shabbos, did they bring the money to the shul with their hands? Or they just said it with their mouth? Only with their mouth. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, instead of kissing the Sefer Torah with the hands and giving tzedakah with your mouth, better you should give a kiss to the Sefer Torah with your mouth and give tzedakah with your hands. And that's the story. Okay.
This is very interesting. Let's say you're in the kitchen and your mommy wants to cook a delicious supper, chicken and potato kugel and salad and vegetables, and she wants to make a dessert out of fruit. So what does she need? What does she need for that delicious meal? She needs to get the chicken and the potatoes, and she needs onions, and she needs spices, and she needs the different vegetables, and she needs the different fruits. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's say the next night, mommy's going to make a milchikah supper. And she wants to make, let's say, pizza, and she wants to make out of cheese and stuff like that. Now, can she use the same stuff like the night before, or she needs different stuff? She needs different stuff. Okay, let's say there's another night and mommy is going to make, let's say, what's a good supper? Fleish. Okay, the next night mommy's making fleish and she's making stuff out of spaghetti. Spaghetti with fleishy. Now, is she going to use the stuff before the night before that she used to make the pizza?
No.
Of course not. She's making fleish. Now, every night that she makes something, it's different stuff. Now, what about breakfast? You're going to have eggs, or you're going to have cereal. Is that the same things she used the night before for supper?
Yeah.
No. For lunch, you're going to have a peanut butter sandwich or a tuna sandwich. The same things or different stuff? Okay. Whatever you're going to have to have different stuff. Is that right? Okay. Now, look at the miracle the way Hashem does it. Let's say Hashem is going to give you a delicious apple. Okay, everybody knows what an apple tastes like. What ingredients, what things did Hashem use? Which things did Hashem use to make that apple, to put together that apple? What did he use? Well, after the seed grew and after the tree is growing, there's a seed, there's a tree. And what does the tree need in order to grow, in order to make those apples? If the tree is up in the middle of the air, it's not going to make any apples. The tree needs something. Once there's an apple tree, the tree needs something in order to make the apples. Okay, what the tree needs is dirt, because I told you, there's the different food that the tree needs in the dirt. So you need dirt, you need water or rain, you need sunshine, and you need air. Four things. Okay. Dirt, water, sunshine, and air. Those things together with the tree will make a delicious apple. Okay, now let's go to a banana. Does a banana taste the same as an apple or different?
Different.
Much different. Okay. There is a banana plant. It's really not exactly a tree, but it's a big plant. Let's see what Hashem uses in order to make bananas growing on that plant. Does he have banana mix, like a powder, and he's going to mix to make the banana? What's he going to use? Dirt, water, sunshine, and air. The same four stuff to make a banana. Okay, let's take an orange. An orange, does it taste like an apple and like a banana, or completely different? Completely different. What does Hashem use? Once you have the tree there, there's no oranges. What is going to go into that tree? What is going to be the stuff to go into the tree to make an orange? Dirt, rain, all right, water, sunshine, and air. Now, let's take a watermelon. Does a watermelon taste the same as an apple, a banana, and an orange, or different? Completely different. Completely different taste, completely different texture, that means the way it feels. What does Hashem use to make that watermelon? Dirt, water, sunshine, and air. The same thing, tomatoes, the same thing, potatoes, the same thing, an onion, the same thing, a carrot, the same thing, plums and peaches, and the same thing, celery, and the same thing, cherries. Now, what if I told you that every supper and every kind of food that comes out of a kitchen or a restaurant, you go into the back, into where they cook, and they only have four things. They're using dirt, water, sunshine, and air. And they're making all this food. Do you believe me, or you'd say it's a miracle? You'd say it's a miracle. How can all of this food come out of the kitchen from only the same four things? Impossible. You need different things. But look what Hashem does. All of Hashem's food is made out of the four same things. Dirt, water, sunshine, and air. Now, is that just a regular thing, or is that a miracle? Okay. But the thing is, since it happens every day and we're used to it, we say it's nature, that's the way it is. But really, what is it? It's a big miracle. Think about it. All the food you eat, with all the different tastes, it's all from four things. But that's the way Hashem does it, right? What if mommy went into the kitchen? She took a bowl of dirt, she took some water, she took sunshine, and she took air. Could she make all that good stuff? Okay, time to cook supper. Let's go shopping. Let's see, give me a bag of dirt, a big thing of water. Okay, we have air and sunshine. Okay, I'm ready to make supper. What kind of a supper would mommy make out of that? Be pretty interesting. But when Hashem makes it,